Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us today. Have you ever taken a brief moment to look something up online only to find yourself clicking link after link after link? That's a near daily experience for me. My obsessive tendencies take root in Wikipedia and other internet troves of information. Later this morning, I'll share one of my latest odd treks down the internet rabbit hole, and we'll hear from listeners who share my tendencies. How do you, if you're like me, how do you manage that impulse? And what are some of the oddest starts where you started looking something up and ended up somewhere totally different as you followed link after link after link? We'll talk about that later on Air Talk this morning. But first, another summer of public outcry over coyotes across Southern California. Residents are demanding that their cities do something about what's perceived to be greater numbers and greater aggressiveness of coyotes. One of the most recent and terrible cases, a Buena Park man who came home Friday night to find blood everywhere in his house as a coyote or coyotes apparently entered the dog door, came in, attacked, and killed his smaller dog, seriously injured his larger dog. Fortunately, that dog will survive. That an instance, at least I've never heard, about a coyote actually coming into the house through a dog door like that. But we have plenty of terrible accounts of dogs and cats being attacked and killed or seriously injured by coyotes. The question is what to do about it. And joining us to talk about what we know and as well as holes in our knowledge when it comes to coyotes is Neve Quinn, who's human wildlife interactions advisor with University of California's Cooperative Extension. Thank you very much, Neve, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, Larry, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. First of all, the idea that we have a particularly robust population of coyotes this year and that perhaps the heavy rains of the winter contributed to larger packs, is that true or not?
So it's hard to know. Nobody's really counting coyote numbers in California. And we know we have lots of coyotes in Southern California, but it's hard to put a kind of a pin in exactly how many numbers. Now, trying to judge if there's more this year than last year is very, very difficult, of course, because if no one was counting last year and no one is counting this year, well, then we don't know.
So it's just anecdotes. And that's one of the challenges in social media, of course, magnifies the whole scale of the problem, because now we're able to communicate with each other about what we see in our neighborhoods. But let's talk a bit about coyote behavior. When we see coyotes in our neighborhood, you know, what sorts of distances do we believe they travel? How territorial are they and confined within given areas? What do we know about coyotes and how they move?
So we know that there's kind of two different types of coyotes. There's generally coyotes that exist in packs. So that's coyotes that have family groups that are territorial. So these areas are defended by these coyotes. And then we have another type of coyote, a transient coyote, which is a solo coyote that roams much, much further than your packs. And they're kind of either looking for a territory, they're looking for a mate, they're looking to, you know, maybe create their own pack or maybe trying to get in with another pack. And they can be sometimes loosely related to a nearby pack, or they may have traveled, you know, several kilometers or miles away from where they originated from, looking for food, space, territory, the things that they need to survive.
Patterns are interesting. I have a coyote who over the past couple of weeks, every night, same time, comes right by my front window, right by my front door, and then down the steps and down the street. And it's like clockwork. And I didn't realize they were so predictable in some cases.
Well, it probably depends on their prey. So you might find that, you know, that's the time that maybe the neighborhood cats are returning home because people are, you know, being more careful about trying to keep their cats in. Or that might be the time where local rabbit populations or gophers or other things that they eat become more active, or it's a better time for them to hunt. And even though they're pack animals, Larry, they don't actually generally hunt in packs. So generally, because their food is so small, you can imagine like trying to share a gopher, even between two people. It's not a very big meal. So it's kind of the same with coyotes. They don't tend to share their food.
Yeah, I wouldn't share my gopher with anybody. Yeah. That's for sure. It's not enough. Yeah. I want my own gopher. Well, let me open up the phones for listeners to call in with questions. We're very fortunate to have an expert on coyotes, but even she'd be the first to admit there's a lot we don't know about coyotes and their efforts to try and research and better understand them. Neve Quinn with us from UC Cooperative Extension, Human-Wildlife Interactions Advisor. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Neve, we've had some people getting up at city council meetings, you know, talking about attacks on their pets, you know, very, very difficult, traumatic events for pet owners, and demanding that the cities go out, capture and relocate or put down the coyotes that they trap. What's the downside of trapping and either releasing elsewhere or killing the coyotes?
Well, in the state of California, it's illegal to translocate wildlife without a permit. So that even means that if you catch a squirrel in your backyard, you're not supposed to take it away and release it anywhere. And that's true for coyotes as well. So it is a possibility that the California Department of Fish and Wildlife would grant permits for relocation of certain wildlife. And we see it certainly for bears and for mountain lions, but we never see it for coyotes. And I think the reason we never see it for coyotes is coyotes are territorial. There's a lot of them everywhere. They're not an endangered species. And so it doesn't make sense to take one and put it somewhere else where either it would still eat cats and dogs, or it would potentially just succumb to pressure from the pack that's already there. And then, you know, the other things you hear at city council meetings are, you know, there's a lot of cities that are relying on hazing. I don't know if you know what hazing is.
Yeah, where you try and scare it off.
Exactly. So you try and make yourself big and wave your arms about. And the idea is that you kind of make the coyote scared of people, like this kind of aversive conditioning type thing. And we don't know if it works or not. There's no scientific evidence to show that hazing works for coyotes. And so cities are relying probably a little bit too heavy on this type of kind of management action because we don't know if it works. And so right now what we're trying to do is we actually have some GPS collars that we're trying to put on coyotes. We're going out, we're trying to trap coyotes and collar them in cities across Los Angeles County in cooperation, you know, with UC, with the County of Los Angeles, and with Western University, who is where our veterinarians are situated, and trying to collar the coyotes and to try and haze them and see, do they change the space that they use? Do they change their behavior? Do they make sure that they're active more at night than during the day? Or does the amount of attacks on pets decrease during this kind of hazing regime that we've planned?
All right. And interesting that we don't know. It's just sort of assumed that that works. Once again, we're talking with Human-Wildlife Interactions Advisor with University of California's Cooperative Extension, Neve Quinn. We're taking your calls with your questions about how best to deal with coyotes, the potential threat to animals. There have even been examples of coyotes coming up and biting kids or biting adults. Was a couple years ago we had like 15 bites in the state, I think, Neve.
Yeah, it's in Southern California, Larry. There's probably more bites in Southern California on people than there are in the entire country combined.
Wow. And do we, obviously we've got density, but so does the Bay Area. Why do we think Southern California has so many more?
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. I think we have a very dense people population. I think we have a very dense coyote population. And I think that we have some behaviors in Southern California that we're not really seeing in other places. Like, you know, we know that coyotes in Southern California eat way more cats than the kind of whatever is shown to be eaten in other states. Like, you know, there could even be like, you know, 20% more cats consumed in Southern California than there is in other states.
Wow.
And we know we have things like, you know, like you already mentioned, like coyotes going into doggy doors. We have the, I don't know if you've ever heard of the wall walkers, the coyotes that walk along the walls in the housing developments and look into the yards. We don't really see that in a whole lot of other places. So it could be that the coyote behavior in Southern California is slightly different, but we won't know that for sure unless we study them properly.
Now, you've been part of research that's looked at the stomach contents of coyotes, right, to determine what percentages of different types of food. And so you mentioned about cats, for example, to what appears to be the mix of their diet.
So they do eat a lot of cats, and they also eat a lot of cottontail rabbits. And they eat some gophers, some rats, and then you wouldn't believe, Larry, what we found in those stomachs. This study was done in cooperation with California State University at Fullerton, and I had a wonderful student there who dissected these disgusting bags of goo, basically, very enthusiastically, very excitedly opened them to see what was inside them. And what's great about a stomach content analysis is that we know absolutely that that contents came from a coyote, whereas if you do a scat study, like a study on the poop of the coyote, it's pretty hard to tell, actually, if that poop came from a coyote. It could have come from a number of different animals. So we know for sure it came from coyotes. We collected over 300 coyotes. We examined their stomach contents, and we found baseball gloves, shoes, holstered furniture. Coyotes literally eat everything.
Although, as I recall reading about your work, it was a little surprising, at least to me, that it didn't appear roof rats were much of the diet. Because one of the things we hear about the positives of coyotes is that they go after vermin, but it didn't sound like, from what you found, that was the case.
So it's kind of a complicated issue, but anyone that's done Biology 101 will have heard of something called an R-selected species, and they're species that reproduce really, really, really quickly at really, really high rates. So they make lots of babies lots of times during the year. That's what an R-selected species is, and that's things like rats. And predators have an inability to control R-selected species. So it's a biological impossibility that any predator, bird of prey, coyote, mountain lion, chupacabra, you name it, can control any of these R-selected species.
All right, 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. And what percentage of the coyote stomach contents were cats again?
We're still trying to correlate and collate our results. And so for us, we're doing a hard part analysis and a DNA analysis. And so it's over 14% so far with our hard part analysis. But it looks like with confirmation from DNA analysis that that is increasing.
I would never guess that cats are such a big part. I mean, obviously, we hear about attacks on cats all the time. But still, coyotes need to eat a lot, to survive. I'm very surprised it's that big a part of their diet.
Yeah, I mean, cats are kind of, I guess, easy prey, and it's just so unfortunate. We have a tool called Coyote Cacher where people can report their encounters to this tool. And, you know, when I checked through, what has happened, it's just heart-wrenching to read the stories of people that have come home to either find bits of cats or can't find their cat or blood in areas. And it's terrible.
Well, it's traumatic. I mean, have a member of the family killed like that, to come home and find it, it's horrible.
I think of my own pets and I would just be devastated. It's just so terrible. But the only way that we're going to be able to keep our pets safe is that if we keep them attended and apparently now locked in the house, because even houses with doggy doors don't appear safe anymore.
Yeah, I know it's certainly changing my behavior. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. And just to clarify on the roof rats, I mean, is the speed of the rats, is it hard for the coyotes to catch them?
It could be, you know, roof rats are called roof rats because they spend a lot of the time off the ground. And so that could be why they don't have a lot of them in the diet. So they can escape up trees. They're very good climbers. You know, they can climb vertical surfaces. So, you know, brick, stucco, things like that, they can cling on to anything that they can cling on to, they can climb up. And so that might be why. And, you know, cats might just be I mean, we all know cats are kind of interesting animals. You know, they're kind of, they kind of stand their ground a little bit almost. And that could be why it could be related to their behavior as well, that more cats are actually eaten than rats. And a cat is a pretty big reward for a coyote. I mean, that's a decent meal.
We'll continue our conversation with UC Cooperative Extension's Neve Quinn. She's Human Wildlife Interactions Advisor. Again, I'd love to hear your questions for her about coyotes. So much we don't know, and the question how to live with coyotes. They're not going anywhere. That's clear. How to deal with it. One of the big problems is there are people who think it's a good idea to feed coyotes. That's kind of mind-boggling, I know, but there are people who think that they need to help the coyotes survive by feeding them. So we'll talk about what can cities do to try and control coyote populations, also to keep the pet populations in their cities safe. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We're talking about coyotes in Southern California, how to deal with them. Neve Quinn of UC Cooperative Extension, Human Wildlife Interactions Advisor, joining us to talk about coyote behavior and what we can do. Neve, to your knowledge, are some cities looking at actually enforcing laws that some of them have on the books against feeding wild animals?
Yes, I know for sure some cities do, and some cities write tickets, and it's exactly what they should do. We know very little surrounding the kind of the bite incidents in Southern California, but what we do know for some of them is that they are related to intentional feeding. But it's hard to really divide intentional feeding from unintentional feeding, because we all have, you know, we live in Southern California for several reasons, but, you know, we have the most incredible weather here and we're able to provide our own food in our own backyards. I mean, how many people in Southern California have a backyard where they don't grow any food? And so that food is very accessible for coyotes, but it is important that we don't intentionally feed coyotes for sure. And I think it's important that it's enforced as well. I think that if we don't have rules that are enforced, people won't follow them.
Let's see. Ian in Anaheim says, I think the main problem is coyotes have lost their fear of humans. Wouldn't it make sense for private citizens to kill the coyotes if they're threatening their pets or family instead of calling animal services? Well, the question would be how you do it, because so let's say you trapped a coyote and they're pretty smart to avoid traps, right, Neve? Then what would you do with it?
So coyotes are non-game mammals, so within legal means you can lethally control coyotes, but there's certain rules that you have to follow. And one of the big things in urban areas is that in most urban areas you can't discharge a firearm, and that also includes an air rifle. And I'm not suggesting that you would ever use an air rifle to euthanize a coyote, but or even a low-caliber air rifle. But it's the problem is that people want to kill coyotes for killing pets. And if you kill one or two coyotes, that just means that there's going to be five or six more coyotes waiting in the wings to still eat the pets. We don't know for sure, because there's also no real data on the effects of lethal control on reducing the numbers of conflicts. In a city, it doesn't make sense that we would be arming our citizens to be wildlife managers. And you're totally right, Larry. It is not easy to catch coyotes. We were out for 5 days last week and we caught none, and we're working with a professional trapper.
Yeah, they're smart, and they learn, of course. So Ian's point, though, is that is there a way to make coyotes more fearful of humans? And you said the hazing, that's not backed by evidence that making yourself big, yelling, making noise, that has a lasting effect. Anything else you'd suggest?
Well, we don't know hazing doesn't work either. So we don't know it does work. We don't know it doesn't work. It's hard to know because nobody has ever tested it. So it may be through our study that we come up with ways to make coyotes change their behavior, but we don't know. There may be kind of higher levels of hazing that might work better. So, for example, probably some of your listeners are familiar, Larry, with the issue with bears in some of our kind of more foothill communities, or in and around, you know, in Tahoe, the bear issue is particularly bad there. And they're using kind of higher levels of hazing, which is kind of like, I guess you could call it like a memorable pain, a kind of a kick in the backside, so to speak, as opposed to trying to ruin the coyote's self-esteem by shouting at it. They use beanbags, kind of these beanbag guns, you know, kind of more, they use dogs as well to really scare the bears up trees. And it's thought that that might be this kind of higher level of hazing, but that's very expensive. It requires trained biologists to use these hazing techniques. And obviously discharging any kind of a projectile in an urban environment is difficult.
All right. Shemian in Valley Glen, good to have you with us.
Hi there. We've had an uptick in coyotes in our street, and we're about three blocks from Valley College, which I've been hearing from various people that seems to be a breeding ground, or at least a den for us, a group of coyotes. We recently had three down our street the other day, and they got three chickens, a cat, and a crow. And a group of us got together and chased them away just by shouting. My question is, with the growth of the population, is there any way to feed them birth control substances in baited food to lessen the population?
Yeah, that's interesting. Is there any way of controlling them that way, Neve?
So I get this question all the time, Larry, and it's a very interesting question. It's a very interesting kind of perspective to have. Now, we don't have any specific birth controls for coyotes, but if you think about it, if you gave a coyote birth control and stopped it breeding, that doesn't stop it eating your pets.
But wouldn't it control the population in the longer run?
So a population can only sustain, or an area can only sustain a certain density. And so realistically, what it would do is it would level out the population, which is what nature would probably do anyway. And so we have lots of inward migration. So what you would get eventually would be that, you know, the pack numbers would start to dwindle, but they would just be replaced from immigrants basically coming in from the outside.
So you're saying that in areas that see many more coyotes, that there's going to be a natural ceiling. It's not like they're going to, you know, just keep growing and growing in numbers. There's a finite density the coyotes can reach.
Yeah, because they can only eat so much food. Now, I couldn't tell you, Larry, if those neighborhoods are already at saturation or if they're still growing. That is really difficult to know, and a question that I can't answer.
All right. Simeon, I appreciate your call. Sylvia tweets at AirTalk, I have a great microchip pet door. It keeps non-approved pets out. That's interesting. I didn't realize there were those kinds of smart pet doors that our chip requires that the chip communicates with the door to allow the authorized pet. Now, of course, if your pet's outside and can't get inside, that doesn't necessarily help, but at least it would help avoid a coyote coming in through the dog door into the house. Let's see. James in Silver Lake just has a behavioral question. Why do coyotes howl? And you often hear the pack of coyotes howling at night. What are they doing, Neve?
I think that's basically their chit-chat time, Larry. You know, they're very social animals, but as we discussed earlier, they don't generally hunt in packs, but they do get together afterwards in their packs, and that's potentially, you know, thus them communicating with other pack members or potentially communicating with associates that are on the, you know, on the edges, or even as maybe a kind of a territory thing for packs that adjoin their territory.
Michael in Boston asks, I've never heard this question before, interbreeding with dogs. So this would be a good chance to talk about the species differences here.
Yeah, so there's no evidence that they are breeding with dogs, but they can be confused with dogs a lot. And so usually, you know, when, and coyotes are quick. Sometimes people just see them out of the corner of their eye and they're not really sure, did they see a dog or did they see a coyote? First off, here in the United States, almost all cities, especially in California, have leash laws. Okay, so it's very unusual to actually see a free roaming dog nowadays, especially one the size of a coyote, but it does happen. And so what I say to people is, one of the easiest things for me anyway is a couple of really good indicators. Like, coyotes don't generally travel with their tails up, and dogs almost always do. Okay, so dogs kind of always have their, don't really have their tails down and in between their legs, but coyotes do. And the other thing is that coyotes always have upright ears and dogs don't always, although sometimes they do. And then the other thing is the shape of the body itself. So in almost all dog breeds, their chest comes down as far as their elbows. Whereas with coyotes, they're kind of very leggy. They just look like they're all legs. And so their chest is kind of much higher than their elbows, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me the difference in how well or poorly fed they can be. You see some coyotes that just look so hale and hearty, and others that look just like they're desperate for the next meal, and they can be in the same neighborhood.
Yeah, you know, the ones that you're seeing that kind of don't look the best, they could be transient coyotes, they could be juveniles that are just trying to figure out what's going on. You know, they've kind of been maybe pushed out of the pack and they're still trying to find their feet, you know, like an 18-year-old that's still eating, like, you know, ramen after they're thrown out of the house. Eventually they figure out, like, how to use the stove, kind of a thing. And it's the same with coyotes. They could just be just trying to figure it out, you know, and they mightn't be, you know, closely associated with the pack in that area. And so that could be what happens.
All right. Niamh, thank you so much for spending this time with us. We appreciate your answering questions and talking about what we know and what we're trying to learn about coyotes and how they interact with us in urban Southern California. Thanks so much.
No worries, Larry. Anytime.
Niamh Quinn, University of California Cooperative Extension. She's Human Wildlife Interactions Advisor. Great to have you with us on Air Talk. Coming up, we'll talk about some dramatic statistical changes in home buying, foreign investment, huge change. Also, significant changes in African American homeownership rates. We'll talk about that after a live update from Hetty Lynn Hurdy's.